Then, is this story keeping me small or helping me to grow? And if the answer is keeping me small, then you get to ask, what is the opposite story? Welcome to Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. I'm Maury Fontanez.
And I'm Melissa Grushka.
Bean, today we're going to talk about the stories we tell ourselves. You ready?
I'm ready to read it.
Hi there. Hi there, Bean. Good intro. Yes. Solid intro, Bean.
Thank you. Thank you. Remember when we used to try to think of funny things for me to say up top and it was so challenging, and now I just shoot from the hip and it is like a
not
crazy
funny
person. No, it's like an insane human. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's fun. It's like recording with my auntie.
I don't know what that means, but I don't like feel like I like it.
What's up? Tell me about
what's
your
up
week. Give me a pleasure, a delight. Quickly, right. Go.
Okay. I have been instructed to keep it brief. My dog is shitting her brains out and cannot stop shitting her brains out. And she shit is on my carpet and she's shitting outside and she's just shitting all over the place.
Horrible. What
it's horrible.
Hell?
And she was on probiotics and special diet and that didn't work. And we're going away next week. And I just want her to stop having diarrhea everywhere so that I can leave and feel okay that she's not going to have diarrhea with somebody watching her. That's my cringe, is that puppies are so freaking cute.
Which one is this? Is
my
this
little one. It's
Mr.
Rosie
Worldwide?
Pants. No, yeah, it's Mr. Worldwide. Yeah, it's Rosie Pants. She's the best little thing ever, but she just like, she always has these things, you know, like her nipples were irritated 2 weeks ago. I feel like I've dropped like $1,500 at the vet this month. It's like, huh, I'm here again for something else for this puppy.
She's the one that Bean and the kids just randomly adopted one day because they decided to go into an adoption center.
She's the best though. She like literally is the best. She's a blessing other than her stomach, like all Jews.
Yeah, exactly. She's just one of you.
You?
Sorry, I hope Mr. Worldwide right feels better. My cringe is that last night we took the kids out to dinner and I went to the bathroom. There's a section here in Santa Barbara called State Street where all the like restaurants and stuff are, but some of the buildings are like from the 1800s. Early 1900s.
Colonel
and
Mustard.
I went to the bathroom. I have an issue with bathrooms in restaurants or public places. Like, they always creep me out. So something must have happened to me in a lifetime somewhere in a bathroom because I get really nervous in bathrooms. Oh. Anyway, it was a two-stall situation and I was finishing up and I hear the door open. I hear a woman go in. I hear like this like kind of not moaning but like sighing heavily. And like some deep breaths and some like moving stuff around. And then I'm like, okay, whatever. There's someone in the stall next to me. And I go to open my door to go out. And I hear my higher self. I hear my intuition say, you're going to open the door. There's going to be no one in that stall. We're just preparing you. I heard it so clearly. So then I'm like, fuck. So I open the door. And of course, there's no one in the bathroom. There's no one in that stall.
No way.
Yep.
Wait, I thought this
when I tell you, I was like a little kid. We know when you play like Bloody Mary or whatever, and I wouldn't look at the mirror. I washed my hands so fast. I didn't even dry them. I like ran out of the bathroom towards TJ.
I thought this was going to be like a masturbation situation.
I know. That's what he said. He was like, are you sure there wasn't someone getting it on in like the broom closet? I was like, no.
Yeah.
It was not a broom closet. It was clearly the sound was coming from the stall next to me. And my guides or my higher self was like, we're preparing you right now that you're about to know.
A bathroom ghost? If I come back, if my spirit comes back, you won't find me in a public restroom. I'm just going to tell you that right now. Okay?
You heard it
here first. You heard it here first, folks. So if you ever do find me there in the afterlife, tell me to get out.
Get out of the bathroom, Bean. I do wonder why your ghost self would want to be in the bathroom.
That's what I'm wondering. Like, why would that woman be attached to that space?
Maybe if you're really funny, you just like it and you know that someone's going in there that's scared of bathrooms and you're a funny ghost that
for
you're
shits,
like
shits and giggles
for
pun
shits
intended
and giggles exactly
for shits
you're like
pee-pee.
I'm gonna go fuck with this lady who I know can sense me and then that'll be fun for me. So anyway, guys, be careful, beware of bathrooms. All right, let's talk about stories we tell ourselves. What do you think about that? I think it, this ghost story.
I think it's going to be a really good time because timing. Yeah. Because I feel like you and I are kind of, well, me more than you, are kind of in the midst of lots of storytelling right now.
So much storytelling to ourselves. So listen, I mean, we're going to talk about something that we think shows up for everyone today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is, whether we even know it or not, we are constantly telling ourselves stories. And we live in these stories. We decide that, you know, we are who we are based on these stories. We decide that other people are going to act a certain way based on the stories we tell. And we thought today, like, let's just talk about, why do we create them? Why are they so convincing? And also, they can be limiting. So how can we rewrite them? That's how we're going to leave you, is with some idea on how to rewrite the stories you're telling yourselves that are limiting you.
I was hoping for that. And also, isn't this part of what you refer to as white noise and limiting beliefs?
Yes, it is. You know, I've been saying fear is a liar a lot. Fear is a liar. Fear is a liar. And I'm like, what does that mean when I say fear is a liar? And it's like, oh, it's creating, our fear selves are creating stories about what could happen. Like, they're projecting a fantasy. It's like a fairy tale. And so I was like, oh, actually what I'm asking is, like, what's the story you're telling yourself right now? When I'm coaching you and you're saying, I really want to go start my own business, but I can't. It's like, what's the story? What is the fantasy? What is the fairy tale you've created that ends with I can't? Let's, like, go explore the whole story.
Can I be negative Nancy already? Okay, sure. Yeah. I will. Does that mean, though, at the end of the day, you truly believe we're all capable of doing anything? We just keep, like, telling ourselves we can't? Like, all humans are capable of all things. You truly believe that?
I truly believe that. I believe that you have to have the desire to want the thing that you become capable of. And so we don't all have the same desires. And that has to do with our unique purpose and why we're here. We have specific desires because we have specific purposes.
Right.
Purpose. But when you desire something, I believe that you are capable of it. And the only reason that you become incapable of it is because of a story you're telling yourself.
Well, that leads me to my next question, actually, then. So, like, in my particular instance, I strongly desire certain things, but cannot, like, figure out the pathway. So the desire is 100% there. Like, it's there. I feel it. I can almost, like, physically feel it in my loins. No, I'm just kidding. But I can't get there. Like, it's too cloudy and, like, murky along the way. Like, just because I have the desire, I can't see how to get to that end game of desire.
Because of the stories that are there. That's exactly right. You're proving our point.
Oh, great. Okay, fine. So you're saying, all right, good, great. Good episode, everyone. Oh, I get it. So I'm telling myself the story and I can't get to my end desire because of the story I'm telling myself, which is
the story.
I know what my story is. My story is, you're not capable of getting to that point. You don't have what it takes to actually get to what you desire, which I'd imagine most people are struggling with, correct?
Right. And also in a story, it's like, so then that means this. And that also means that I have to do that. Like, we start to extrapolate all of these future scenarios from that base story, and the story just continues to build. It's like, think about if you were talking about a third, you know, in third person. Like, once upon a time, there was a girl named Melissa. She wasn't capable of anything.
Exactly.
Because she wasn't capable of anything, she Like, that's the story you're living in.
And then I guess like you said, extrapolate. I'll be like, I can't get to that. So I should probably veer off and go over here because it's safer and feels more attainable to me.
Right.
Great. I mean, awesome. I love that. One, is the goal then to understand the story and repair the story, or just acknowledge the story and move on from it? Like, I don't get why we can't all just, if we all desire it that deeply, why we can't just move closer to it and, like, sidestep the story? Like, okay,
when you realize that you're in a story, that in itself creates such an unlock, I think, because it's like, oh, if this is just a story, what's a story? A story is fiction. if this is just fiction that I've created, I can write any story.
That's true. Totally true.
Think about how empowering that is.
Okay. So can we, let's unlock mine specifically if we can, because I think, but only because, because I think that mine is probably the same as a lot of people's, which is I want XYZ, but like, there's no way me as this human being could possibly get there. Right. One, where did this come from? Because truthfully, I'm going to tell you not to toot my own horn, I actually think I'm a very capable human in so many ways. Like I actually throughout the day, no joke, things often will feel really hard. And I say these things out loud to myself. I'll be like, you can do anything. You can do anything. Because I really believe I can do so many things and I'm super capable. But for some reason, this huge goal of mine feels completely unattainable and like a make-believe.
Well, so listen, these narratives start from a long, long time ago. And that's the point, is like when you can pinpoint the story, you can pinpoint the origin of the story. Yeah. So Bean, I mean, if we're talking about you as an example, but let's generalize this. Anyone that's in a limiting story, that's in a narrative, that's in a fiction about themselves has been living in this narrative for a long time. And so I think that's the first part, is to understand this has been happening for me for a long time. I've defined myself by the story. And the thing that's really wild is that they're usually super subconscious, these stories. It's not like we walk around thinking, I am living in this story today. It's still like we are not aware, but it's guiding our behavior. It guides how we speak to ourselves, how we show up with other people. And it's really powerful because when you believe the story, you start to filter the world through the story that you believe. You don't just think you're unlovable. You start to notice every little sign that confirms, for example, that people don't love you, even if it's not real. So that's the power of the narrative that we create and we live in, is that we then see the world through that narrative. And I always tell people, don't go looking for evidence because you'll find it. And I think this is another example of that, is when you're seeing the world through a story, then you're going to look for evidence that you're right about that story.
Which I guess in turn only builds up that story even further and pushes it into an even more subconscious, like, of course I am this way because look at X, Y, and Z.
Well, I want to know why you think we create the stories to begin with. Like if they're not serving us, what is the point of living in this fiction? Why do we do this as people?
I don't know. But my guess, based on all of my knowledge from you, is that it's something we use in our childhood to feel safe and feel loved and accepted. And we just suppress anything that we believe in our minds will not get us that love.
Right. It's basically, if something felt painful or scary or confusing, our brains needed to organize it somehow.
Right.
That simply. Like, this happened because blah, blah, blah. And that is the narrative. We start to shape the narrative. And usually when we're really little, we make ourselves the problem at the core of that story. Like we would rather believe that we are bad as kids than that the world isn't safe.
Isn't that wild? Doesn't that almost seem biologically doesn't make sense? I guess it is that allows you to stay in community with others.
Right, exactly. It's like, I would rather believe I'm the one that is unlovable than my mom is not capable of loving me. Because that second idea is so destabilizing. Like this person who's in charge of my care actually isn't capable of that care. That's too much for our little brains.
Yeah.
So the story our little brain creates is there's something wrong with me.
That is so heartbreaking. And then that becomes your truth and you hang on to that.
Yeah.
That's really, so, okay, fine. So how do you know? Does that mean that, it doesn't mean though that every thought you have is a story. Like we have feelings that are stories and we have feelings that are genuine, intuitive thoughts. How do we know when we're responding or acting in a way according to a really limiting, deep, deep subconscious belief? Or that's just kind of who we are. Like,
when the thought is repeated, it becomes the story. So, you know, when we start with that origin point of like, man, if I were easier, mom wouldn't get so angry. Or if I tried harder, dad would love me back or be more present. That's giving us a sense of control of what's happening. Right. And then we start to repeat, I'm not easy, or I'm too much. I want too much. I'm too rambunctious. I'm too active. I talk too much, right? Like all these ways that you're not easy. And that's why mom is getting mad. And when you start to repeat that story more and more and more, it becomes a part of your identity. Then you decide that that's who you are. And it just starts to feel like who you are. And then what happens on top of it is what we talked about, which is something actually in psychology called confirmation bias. Do you know what that is?
When you think something and then, right.
You look for confirmation.
And then you find it. You can always find it.
Yeah. So then every person who tunes out when you're talking is confirmation that you talk too much. Every email that goes unanswered is confirmation that you're being rejected. Like it begins to add up in that identity that you've created in your story that it's you. You're the reason that this is happening in the world.
It's really tricky thinking of it from a parent's perspective, because I'm even thinking like sometimes I'll tell my oldest, it's like too much. I'll be like, it's too much. Like she got a ride to school yesterday and was getting something else and then was like, can you pick me up also instead of taking the bus? And I was like, it's too much. Like take a break, take a breath, have a little gratitude that you got all these other things. So am I not supposed to say to her, like, how do we teach our children without creating these limiting beliefs, but also teach them the ways of the world? That's a little off topic, but
no, that's a good
question. Relative.
I think that I'm in this right now. I mean,
right. We all are.
Man, I'm in this with teenagers for sure. And I think that I am leaning more towards, I don't have to have the answer or define you right now in this moment. I'm leaning way more towards like curiosity and asking them questions. I'm trying. Than making statements. But I don't think that this is about what you say to them. I think it's about how they witness you responding to them.
Okay.
So like for me, maybe one of the things I've had to work through with my daughter is my ADD, and that I can sometimes just completely lose focus in a conversation. And one of the beliefs it was starting to create in her was like, she's not interesting.
Oh, baby.
And I had to find that it was happening and talk to her about it and say to her, my brain is doing something right now that's making me disengage. It has nothing to do with you. And so here are some ways that I try to stay engaged that I'm going to work on. I'm going to ask you more questions as you're talking. I'm going to make sure all distractions are set aside. I'm going to look you in the eye. So I don't know. I think you're asking like if you said to your daughter that her schedule is too much. Are you starting to build the identity? No, I think you're being too specific and tactical. I think this is more about how broadly we as parents unknowingly react and the stories that our kids create. This is what I think is important in this kind of healing work. And I think you and I get tangled up in this a lot, is like, you think it's a blame thing.
Yeah.
You know, like even when we're working on your stuff, and yeah. I'm saying like, and you're like, but my mom didn't mean it. It's like, it's not a blame thing. It's a cause and effect thing.
Right.
It's, you know, this just is. And so therefore that happened. So I'm not saying that our parents forced us to be in these stories or that it's just by
how
living
it came to be.
In relationship with other humans that our young minds don't understand.
Right.
We create stories about ourselves so that we can understand these people because we want them to be infallible. So it can't be anything wrong with them. There's got to be something wrong with us.
And how fascinating that you just said that your ADHD was causing her to, ADD was causing her to feel that way, because that is completely not even directed at her. But as you said, her young brain is still creating a story about herself when it's not even you being like some absentee parent. It's just a natural part of you that she's interpreting in that way and creating
yeah.
a That's so heartbreaking.
So let's talk about how do you recognize when yes. you're inside a story?
Correct.
And not actually responding to what's happening in front of you. You're responding to the story. So one of the first clues is intensity. You know that saying, if it's hysterical, it's historical?
No.
I use that a lot in coaching. It's like, if there is an intensity, if something hits you way harder than it logically should, then there's probably a deeper narrative underneath it. Okay. So for example, this week you and I are working on some speaking stuff for me. And I really wanted this one to work out because it was in Dublin and that would have been fun. And it didn't. Luckily, this time around, I took it in stride and I realized, yeah. I was like, oh, okay, cool. Because I'm in trust and faith, meaning I'm not in the story. I'm in a headspace of that's getting moved out of my way because something better is coming. But what I would have done, and you were expecting it, is I would have had an intense reaction to it. Yeah. That intensity to, hey, they can't fly to Dublin because it's too expensive. The linear reaction would have been, okay, it's too expensive. Something better is coming. If I have an intense reaction to it, then that is a deeper narrative it's hitting, which is right. They don't think I'm good enough.
Right.
They don't value me enough. I'm not, you know, like they won't go out of their way because I'm not enough. There's probably some other author out there that's way more impressive. That's when you start to notice the narrative is if your reaction is really intense to a stimulus that is not as intense.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. And then do you acknowledge that feeling and give it a little compassion and love? Like, oh, I see you're feeling really intense, system.
I'm going to get to that. I promise. Right now, I just want to talk about the signs that you know you're in a story.
Oh, all right. Okay.
So like, for example, Bean, if you text me mm-hmm. and I don't text you back right away.
Yeah.
What's like a story you might get into?
She's mad at me.
Exactly.
I used to feel that way more. Now I'm just like, fuck everybody. But yes, a lot of people do. Yes.
That's a really like very relatable example of an intense reaction to something that's not intense. I might be in a doctor's appointment, but immediately if you go to she's mad at me, then that's an old wound. And that's the story starting to like present itself. And say, this is the way you should see the world. That is that can be a neglect wound.
Oh.
That can be a wound around being around a caregiver or a group of friends where you were constantly like scapegoated.
Yeah.
Like where people did get mad at you for like silly things, or you were gaslit. You were told that someone else's bad mood was your fault. Or you would get iced out. I mean, my mom, God love her, most fucking loving parent on the planet. But one thing she used to do that I notice I'm sort of doing with my son right now is like she would ice you out that day. And I'd call her and be like, Mom. And she'd be like, nope, I don't want to talk to you right now. Like she would just be so – she'd get ice cold in the moment that she was disappointed in me when I was younger.
Right.
Didn't last very long. But it did give me this anxiety that if people seem cold to me, I've pissed them off somehow.
Oh, I do that though. I mean, I am angry in the moment, you know? It's hard to break from being angry in the moment, but I guess as the child, you still internalize and you say, oh, that's me. I see.
Yeah. So what I've been doing now, I'm noticing it, is to just be like reminding myself to be like, hey, just be like, I love you. Have a great day. Like I can be disappointed in this decision you made and I can still show up and be loving to you. So that's an example. Another sign that you're in a story is black and white thinking. So if you hear yourself saying, I always mess up, nobody ever chooses me. You know what I mean? These like really black and white statements, always, never, those kinds of things are a sign that you are in your story. Because here's the thing, truth usually lives in nuance.
Fascinating. I love that.
There's no real like polarity in truth. Usually truth is somewhere in between the thing.
Right.
So I try to remind myself of that when I have this rejection feeling that comes up with friends. Like, they went somewhere and I wasn't invited. Like what they must be mad at me. It's like, what are the 783 other possible
reasons,
nuances that exist?
Right.
Not just the black and white thinking.
And I bet if you have that feeling in a variety of scenarios, it's like you should look for that common thread and analyze, why am I feeling this way in this friend group, in my job, in my marriage? Like, why is it constantly showing up?
That's such a good point. That's the third thing, is patterns. Like if you start to look at the patterns, that the same painful belief is showing up over and over again in different scenarios, that's a really good sign that you're in a story. Like, it feels like this at work. It feels like this in my marriage. It feels like this with my friends. Oh, this is a story. This is an overarching story that is presenting itself in every aspect of my life.
Okay, great. So I think this is actually a great transition moment for me to say, I don't see that showing up in many other areas of my life. So it is confusing. Like I was saying before, if we didn't cut it out, that I do often think to myself, like, you can do this, you can do that, you're capable, you can do this, you're strong, you're able to. But for some reason, with my bigger dreams, I really struggle. And I do want to completely flip that narrative, but I'm having trouble.
Okay, I'm going to give you 3 writing prompts. This is for anybody who wants to, if you notice, remember, I always say awareness is the number one step. If you notice these patterns, black and white thinking, repeated pattern, what was the first one that I said, by the way?
Repeated.
The first one was that the intensity.
Intensity.
So like if something is super intense, that's not meant to be intense, or you're being very black and white about it. So if you notice you're in a story because of those clues, 3 questions you can ask yourself, and I love for you to write it out or not. But one is, what is the story I'm telling myself right now? So for you being the bigger dream, what is the story?
Right. I'm not capable of achieving this dream.
Okay. And then whose voice is that? Just see what comes out. You don't have to answer this right in a second, but just whose voice is that? You and I did a little session last week. Remember, I kept repeating the question to you very calmly. Like, whose voice is that? I don't know. Whose voice is that? Whose voice is that? Like, the more that you just allow your consciousness to focus, your consciousness has the answer. That's the thing I want you all to know. Every answer that you seek is in your consciousness. So if you believe it's there, you'll find it. Whose voice is that?
Okay.
And then, is this story keeping me small or helping me to grow? And if the answer is keeping me small, then you get to ask, what is the opposite story?
I love it. You do that a lot. And I do love that. That's one of my favorite things is what if, and it's always negative. What if this is negative? And you say, what if it all works out?
Yeah. What if your dream is possible?
And then what? You just push all your energy in that direction?
Well, and then, okay. So first of all, you have separated yourself from the story. There is a power in that separation so that you're no longer identifying with it. When you don't identify with it, you show up differently. And so those micro organic moments of change in you, the way you think about something, then the way you speak about that thing, the way you act around that desire, all of that adds up and begins to shift your energy. And when your energy shifts, then we receive the same energy in return. So it's these little tiny shifts in not identifying with the story. That's like, who do you become when you don't believe that you are this story anymore? It's in that who you become in those little ways that you start to see things changing around you in your life.
And then you probably also stop looking for that confirmation bias like we were talking about. You start seeing confirmation bias of the positive things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which exist already. We just aren't drawn to them if we're feeling negative about something.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And I also want to really say that this is about micro changes. So the intensity, let's use that as an example. Let's say that the story is, I always fail. I'm not going to try this because I always fail. Right. The micro changes, you know, I've struggled at this before, but I'm learning how to do it and I'm trying again.
And each time is a lesson to get me closer to it.
Yeah. Or with me, like I'm too much. I'm too much. I'm too much. I have really shifted that to be like the level of depth I bring to something is not something everyone can always meet me at.
Right. Which is a beautiful thing if you
reframe
it that way.
Much more empowering story for myself than you're too much. And they can't handle you or like they don't want you for that reason. Yeah. Great. And then, you know, I'm going to say this, but your intuition plays a really big role here because the minute that you detach yourself from this fear-based story, where that makes your body feel tight and small and contracted and anxious. The minute that you are in a more empowering story and your body relaxes and you're more grounded, guess who shows up?
Yeah, I feel like the detachment is the most challenging part. Like, I can identify, I can see, I think I need to put the energy into detachment. That's
detaching from the story, you mean?
Yeah, that you've been telling yourself for me for 42 years or whatever it is. I mean, this didn't come from nowhere. It's some deep-rooted something. So to detach from something that is in your core.
Oops. Yeah. Yeah. And then when you do, then your higher self shows up. And that's when you're in dialogue with a very wise, intuitive part of you that is going to give you answers that are way more expanded and abundant and full of possibility than the ones that exist in the contracted self.
Who doesn't want that?
Right?
Yeah. Like, come on, guys.
So here's what I think. Yeah. Here's what I'm going to challenge us all to do this week. I want you to just start naming the stories out loud and say it to someone safe. Like, you know, I notice I've been living in a story that ... What is the story you're living in? Try to identify it and try to say it to someone who feels safe to you. And just start there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some journal prompts, I'll just say them again in a different way. What's a story I tell myself often? Is it keeping me small or allowing me to grow? Where did that story come from? What's a new story I want to tell myself instead? Maybe you can do this journaling, Bean.
I am. I was just actually thinking of my own answers in my head, not writing them, but I should write them down. I will. And I thank you for the tangible takeaway, as you know.
Before always, you even asked for it.
Always gets me hot. I love
it. We have not done a Melissa's Famous Takeaway in a long time. So Bean, you want to give us your takeaway from this stories episode?
I do. It's really the same. All of my takeaways tend to often be the same, which is we just have so much deep within us that it's hard to untangle what is what. And it's a lifelong process of really understanding who we really are versus what we believe in our minds that we are. And if you can unlock, and I feel like sometimes you can only unlock in certain areas, but the more you do it, the more it becomes a habit. I mean, I feel like there's like a common thread through every single episode. We essentially often say very similar sentiments, which is like, just pay attention. Pay attention to who you really are, what really feels right inside, not all of this outside shit that we can't help. You can't help it. Stop blaming yourself for feeling these ways too. That was another takeaway. That you're always like, why am I like this? I'm always like, why do I keep doing this to myself? I'm only getting in my own way, but I can't help it. It was me as a child. It was me as a teenager. I mean, it was stuff I absorbed. It's almost like a sponge that you're wringing out, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's a really good visual. Yeah. And also give yourself some grace. The world tells a lot of stories. The society you live in tells a lot of stories. The family
religion,
you came from
culture.
Told a lot of stories. Like you are adopting a lot of stories from the outside world too. So if this is lighting you up, then get curious about those things. Like, where am I carrying stories from my culture, my family, from the media? And are these stories keeping me small or helping me to grow?
I think this is also a great segue into our next episode, which is going to be all about trying to get what you want. I think unpacking your stories is going to lead you to get what you want, girl.
Good call. You're so right. Well, guys, Bean, thank you. Thank you all for listening. This has been another episode of Signal. If you enjoyed what you heard, please share this with at least two people. That would help us a ton by spreading the message of what we're trying to do here on Signal. And we will be back again next week with another episode. See you then. Bye.
Bye.
This has been another episode of Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. This podcast is co-hosted and produced by myself, Maury Fontanez, and Melissa Bushka, and is edited by our sound editor, Josie Barak. Stay tuned next week for another episode.